Welcome back, my peeps, to Workday Playdate with Improve It, where we mix a little play with some powerful workplace truths. Now, this month, we are deep diving into Career 101, which is all about owning your career. Because if you're waiting for somebody else to give you the reins, you might be waiting forever. Now, today's guest is the real deal, pun intended, that is my last name. When it comes to the future of work, no fluff, no gimmicks, just real strategy that actually moves the needle. So here's the truth, y'all. Employee engagement is down, and no amount of pizza parties or ping pong tables are fixing it. So according to Gallup, only 33% of U.S. employees are engaged at work. 33%. And disengagement costs companies billions annually. That's why we've invited Dr. Angela Jackson, the founder of Future Forward Strategies, who is literally designing the human capital infrastructure for tomorrow's workforce. She's taught at Harvard, yes, Harvard, led a nationwide Future of Work Grand Challenge to reskill 25,000 displaced workers, and she's been featured in CNN, Quartz, Harvard Business Review, and more. Simply put, she knows what's up. So if you're a people leader frustrated by your team's lack of motivation or an employee wondering why everything feels like burnout and BS, you're not alone. So maybe you've thought, why should I give more when no one's really noticing? Or you're stuck in the career quicksand where nothing feels like it's moving. Data is backing you up here, okay? Only 20% of employees strongly agree that their performance is managed in a way that motivates them to do outstanding work. Even more recent, we need to have this play date with Dr. Angela Jackson. Let's play, y'all. Okay, Improve It peeps, y'all aren't ready. I don't know if I'm ready. Dr. Angela Jackson is on Workday Playdate today. Welcome to the show, Dr. Angela.
Erin, thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Oh my God, you look beautiful. And it's like 8 a.m. your time and you're just like, you're like ready for the day. I mean, not that I'm not ready by 8 a.m. some days, but like you just look ready to go. And tell everybody where you're calling in from, because I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so ready because I'm dialing in from San Francisco. I'm here at the Chief Clubhouse. Chief is an executive membership for women executives and helping women support women. And, you know, a lot of us are working in the fields where we're leading people functions, we're leading teams. So I'm excited to share my book, The Win-Win Workplace, with their members today.
So cool. It's so dope. And I love your energy. We have mutual connections. Shout out to the Chicago SHRM community who knows Dr. Angela and all the HR peeps in Chicago. So I'm so thrilled you're here. We always like to start the top of the show by just setting an intention for our time together. So what's one word you would like to give, one word you'd like to receive during this conversation? What's one word that comes to mind?
Inspiration. And, you know, I'd love to give that inspiration, but I always find when I have these conversations, I'm also inspired, right, by what I learn and what comes up from them.
I love it. I love it. I feel like you are inspiring people all over the world, and we're very lucky to have you here. So let's just get into it, because we're talking about employee engagement, and the theme for this month on the show is Career 101. So we just want to say with that, when we talk about Career 101, we're talking anybody who might be new inside of an organization, anybody who might be doing an intern program or a new hire program. Maybe you're a seasoned professional and you're just starting a new job and you need to kind of refresh yourself on where you are in the workplace. I want to think about employee engagement because it ties right in to just navigating our careers. Let's just talk about when we say that, just in case somebody's like, what are they talking about? How would you define employee engagement?
Oh, I love this question. When I think about employee engagement, it's really the crux of my writing is thinking about how do we have employees who are showing up at work every day, you know, excited about the task at hand, who are engaged with some of the problem solving that we're doing as a company, and not just thinking about what their role is, but really thinking about how they can add value across the organization. The ideal state that I talk about is having almost an ownership mindset where the employee, yes, they're doing a role, but like they're really thinking strategically about the business. Like that's a fully engaged employee. And Erin, as you know, there's a spectrum of that, right?
Yes.
There are people who are doing that plus plus, and there are people who are happily in the middle.
For sure. And I now am a business owner, and I was once an employee, and I think about my own engagement when I was an employee, and it wavered, you know, like depending on the month, the time of month, the year, like whatever. It just wavers. So I just like starting there as a base, because I think a lot of people, when we think of employee engagement, they think it has to be, you know, this like rah-rah cheerleader-esque team building type scenario. We need ping pong tables and pizza parties and things like that. What would you say to somebody who doesn't really have an understanding or a desire to lean into employee engagement? What would you say to that person listening right now?
Well, the biggest thing, and I love what you said, you know, sometimes you have ups, you have downs. When we talk about like ideal engagement, even when there's hard times, this is when it matters the most. And because this is when people maybe sometimes dial out. And so you can really tell about your employees and their level of engagement when times are hard. Are you coming together as a team? Are you supporting each other? Or is everyone kind of an island out there on my own? And so, again, I love talking about this subject because I think what people get wrong is what they think employees want to be engaged.
Yeah.
And I write about this in the book. Chapter one, I talk about centering worker voice. And most people, HR professionals, will say, of course we listen to our employees. And I was at a meeting where 100 HR professionals and their boss was there, CHRO, and they talked about their latest engagement survey. And I said, she goes, well, what do you think of our results? And so I said, well, let me ask a question to the audience. I said, how many of you all did the survey? They all raised their hands. I was like, how many of you all have heard back feedback about what's going to change or what's going to stay the same because of your feedback? Literally all the hands went down except for 8. And so that was like 8 out of 90 people. And I say that to say we're engaging people. We're spending billions of dollars on engagement. But the question is, are we asking employees what matters most to them? When I've gone out there and I stood up a 200-member worker advisory board, it was very clear to me that they did not want ping pong tables.
Yeah.
We have a multi-generational workforce. We've got mothers who are caregiving for their children and elderly parents. So it's really clear, like, if you really want to engage employees, that you have to like meet them where they are and ask them the questions that matter most to them about their ability to actually do their job.
Okay, I have so many questions just based off that answer. Okay, my first question is, how do we ask? Is it just as simple as what matters most to you? Do you have specific questions that you recommend? Is it just saying, hey, you know, I want to check in on you. What matters most to you in this workplace? What would make your work life experience great? Is that how we do it? Or what's a good way to ask?
That's an excellent way to ask. And there's a couple of things that we say, and we've seen this, and we call them in the book, the win-win workplaces. And we've seen team leaders do this. They're not waiting for the annual survey, even if, you know, twice a year. What they're doing is they're looking at 2 to 3 questions that they say consistent with. Right? Because it becomes a practice. And as people know, and Erin, you know this, and all of our people leaders listening, before people start to tell you what is wrong, they first want to know that you actually care. And some people have only had performative gestures. So you may have to ask them those 2 or 3 questions over time for months to get them to open up. But as a people leader, how are we showing our commitment to that engagement? So to your point, asking, one, how are you doing? 2, What are some things we can do to make your life easier? And how's everything going at home? And the at home one is interesting because in the world of work, and I called it the zero-sum workplaces, anything that was personal that was happening, we just checked it at the door, right? You weren't supposed to talk about that. You put your head down, you're getting a paycheck. But what we saw during the pandemic was that we're only as healthy as our colleague. And we are brought into people's homes and we see that like life can get in the way of work. And so what we're seeing with really good managers and leadership, they're making this more discussable and saying, what could they do as employers to help in this moment? And I'll give you just a quick example. There was one financial services firm. They saw that there were a lot of their employees who were starting to caregive for elderly, for their elderly parents. They put together an ERG group. They put together a new benefit around caregiving that expanded it to parents. And so it's things like that that actually had an outsized influence that are very different than free lunch or playing pool, right? That meaningful contribution to caregiving really meant a lot to those employees. And engagement, we saw engagement go up. We saw net promoter score go up.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Oh my, I'm literally not even looking at my notes because I'm like, this is gold. Okay. So let me ask you this. So repeat the first one again. The first question you can ask is?
The one is really, how are you?
How are you really?
Like, how are you really?
Yes.
And wait for the answer.
Yep. And then.
Right. And we've got to give a beat. And that's the practice that we're doing. That's just level setting so people can bring their humanity.
Yes.
And you're building trust.
And then number two is, what can I do to make your life easier?
Yes. And make your job easier, right?
Yep.
Like what is one thing we could do? You know, what ideas that you have that you could be more productive, or if there's a barrier that we can get out of your way, giving them the space so that they are actually informing you, right, of what some of their blocks are before they become a bigger issue. So that's number two.
Number two. And number three is, how is everything at home? I love that, Dr. Angela. Can I just piggyback off that thought? Like, you are so right that we used to say, check things at the door. There is no way. I lead with empathy, and it's a blessing and a curse. Let me just say that. Because then I do take on, listen, I preach about radical empathy. But I think as an empath, sometimes what I do is I take on a lot of the things. And that's my own personal problem. That's a whole other show. But when we understand what the other person is feeling, and when we hear what is making our employees show up different on Zoom, or show up different in that meeting, or show up just differently on Slack or Teams, whatever it is, and we understand the human being behind it, it actually makes us a better leader and them more engaged for you to understand. Would you agree with that, or what would you say?
No, I completely agree. And I have colleagues at the Harvard Chan School of Public Health. They did a survey about a month ago, and they said of U.S. employees who have a critical illness, 32% of them had missed a doctor's appointment because they were afraid to tell their manager. Mm. And so I say this when we really are checking in with people. The reason why we have to be so outward and transparent with it and so proactive is that without giving that space, people are left to make meaning. And I'm sure if you went to the managers of those people who missed their doctor's appointment, the manager would have been like aghast and been like, of course, I would have never wanted them to miss a critical doctor's appointment. But the perception of the employees are the reality. And so these questions and putting them into practice are helping people leaders, right, really make sure that they're opening the window so that we can be empathetic, that so people can show up as their full selves. And we know when that's the case, instead of covering, making excuses, they can apply all of that energy to actually doing the job, right, that they have.
Oh my God, I love it. Okay. So this is just so good. I have more questions within your answer before. So when you say, once we start to really ask these three questions and we hear some of the answers, what are some examples? I love the example of the ERG group for caregivers, but what are some things that you've heard employees say that they really want? That would make their job easier? What are some things that you've heard in your research?
Yeah, well, there's another good one. There's a fast casual restaurant and the CEO is super generous. And one thing he did is when he took over in leadership, he expanded their 401k benefits and he expanded it to all workers. It had been for just kind of senior executives, more highly paid. And he called me in because he was perplexed because none of the frontline workers were taking advantage of this 401k benefit. And he goes, you know, Dr. Angela, do you know why? And I was like, well, no, but have you asked them? And to his credit, he had only heard anecdotally from supervisors. He hadn't asked him, but they end up doing the survey and we did that together. And it was interesting when we surveyed these employees about their benefits, and this one in particular, they said, you know what, they really appreciated the benefit, But a lot of them were talking about the needs that they have today. And so a lot of them talked about, you know, school fees that they have for their kids. They have tuition. And so one thing he realized is that the majority of his workers that were early career, 401k seemed very far off for them. They wanted different types of benefits. And so, again, to this leader's credit, he reallocated that dollars and gave them choice. And so people could use it to help pay off their tuition. People, could use it if they wanted to do something extracurricular for their children or school fees. But again, that was the shift. Same amount of dollars used differently, but then you got the perceived value being higher for the actual employees because they got more of what they really wanted and needed at that time.
I love it. Great leadership, whoever you are. Good job, you know, okay? Because truly, I think this is a lot of what the issue that I hear. And when I was on the Chicago Shrimp committees, I would hear a lot about employee engagement, employee wellness programs. And it's very interesting to think back when I was an employee, what our employer thought at the time was an appropriate thing to give us. They gave us before we had like Apple Watches. This was early 2000s. Okay. Yeah. This is early 2000s. They would give us like the little pedometers, you know, to like to track our steps. They're like, this is our wellness initiative. We're getting bouncy balls in the office and pedometers. And great, you spent probably $100 on that. But what I really wanted was $100 for my improv class to take after work, you know? And so I think really this is just such an example. I can see it from both sides, sitting in a leadership seat and then also sitting in an employee seat, how important it is, especially now. And I want to talk to you about this because you mentioned post-pandemic, the shift. What changes have you seen in employee engagement from prior to 2020? And then, well, let's just talk about post-2020 on. Have you seen more leaders leaning into these three questions? What have you seen from these are two questions. What have you seen more leaders lean into this? And what have you noticed from just an employee engagement perspective in general, the shift since 2020 to now?
Well, there's a couple of things, Erin, that I've been seeing. So one is, post the pandemic, well, even during the pandemic, we saw leaders lean in ways that, you know, a lot of us in corporate America never thought possible, you know, thinking about hybrid work, thinking about different accommodations. And it worked well. And what's so interesting is I've seen a group of leaders, and I'd probably put them into like three categories. The first category, I'd say, and those are the zero-sum workplaces, they just want to get back to normal. You know, they want everyone back in the office. They want to act like, you know, 2021 did not happen.
Yep.
Let's just put the shades back on. And then there are some that actually had some awareness, right? And are thinking, you know, going back to the way we were working wasn't working for some more people. Why can't we look at doing things differently? And I'll give you an example of one of those companies, you know, LinkedIn, for example. You know, everyone's debating what their return to office policy is. One thing that LinkedIn did, instead of mandating an employee return to work policy, first what they did was they informed it by like actually surveying the people and saying, we're thinking about coming back to office. In substance, it said, what would need to be true for you to come back? What types of work would you like to do that you could only do in person with people? And then based on that, they developed their return to office policy, but they also reimagined their work places. So really thinking about spaces for collaboration, spaces for convening. And it's not all about tiny cubicles and having people. Like, how do we actually have people come together and work? And I think that's a best case scenario. Now, is everyone going to be happy? No. But, you know, one thing that you will hear when they surveyed their employees was that everyone felt like they had a voice in this and that they understood the strategy. And I think that's what we can hope for at the end of the day.
Oh, my gosh. I love it. I love it. And, you know, we work with LinkedIn. LinkedIn is actually one of our clients. And I have to say, they do an amazing job engaging and providing learning opportunities for their people. And they think outside of the box in a lot of ways. And I will say, I had a friend who worked at LinkedIn for a while, and I know that that was true. And I feel like the Chicago office of LinkedIn did have to go in. And I know a lot of people are like back in the office 3 days. I think the shift, what I'm seeing now is from just like an outside seat, because I obviously I'm an entrepreneur, run my own business, is that collaboration is so much more appreciated when we are in person. And I feel it with my own team because we all live in different areas now. So what would you say you notice from an engagement perspective when people do come together? Is it like a greater, does it feel more intentional, and does it feel like it matters more? Or what are you seeing from where you sit in this amazing seat of researching employee engagement?
So again, everything is a bit different, but you've got this kind of group of people who are really thinking out of the box and using engagement in different ways. So for example, I was with, you know, a bank who I have to anonymize their name, but one thing their CEO said, you know, if we're bringing people in, how are we make sure that we're making it worth their while? You know, and a lot of the younger professionals do want to come in, but they want to come in with a purpose. And so this CEO and their leadership team, again, was designing for these days, you know, what does that collaboration look like? And so the best engagement is when you've got a C-suite leader or leadership team being intentional about what that design looks like, you'll find more engagement. If folks are just coming in and getting back on Zoom and talking with headphones, you're going to see less engagement. And again, we've been seeing that where employees will say, you know, not to their manager, but like, why do I need to be here if I'm only on Zoom with headphones? Like, I haven't talked to anyone at all. And so those are the two gaps. You've got a group that are just being more conscious and intentional. And then you have some that are not doing anything at all. And what I'd say to your listeners are, people appreciate the experiments and the pilots. No one's expecting perfection. You know, one thing that I saw when we looked at what I call in the book, the win-win workplaces, they would do a lot of pilots. They would get feedback. It was almost this continuous learning loop. And they'd bring employees in and they'd say, you know, this is why we're doing this. You know, this is our intention behind this. You know, how is it landing for you? Is there something you would improve? Do you want to continue? And I think that continuous feedback loop is really what helps them get better.
I love it. And I see. Okay. So you're just like hitting the nail on the head for me, because everything you say, I hear you speaking and I'm like, okay, I hope so-and-so listens to this because they're feeling this exact same way. You're speaking to so many people who are feeling this uncertainty when it comes to coming back to work. I want to talk to you a little bit about, we talked about high employee engagement, how we can see it in our workplace. But what would you say the biggest mistake is a leader can make when trying to fix low engagement? What would you say that is? Like, is there something that you have seen? And I like to stay positive, but I just want to give examples to give people an understanding of what not to do.
Well, there's a couple of things. One is, and I'll give an example, and maybe some of your listeners have heard of it. When you're trying to do engagement, the truth is you're probably going to hear some things that you're not happy about, or some things you put into place that were well-intentioned that did not land. The worst thing that people can do is react poorly in that moment. And I'll give you an example, and this is not his best moment, and he talked about this, but Jamie Dimon, there was a couple months ago where he had a town hall, and you know, one brave soul stood up and asked a question about the return to office policy, and he was just explaining that it probably wouldn't make sense for his department. Jamie went off, you know, and the reason, you know, he did, and it, again, he later apologized for it. But what happened subsequent to that is that employee went back to their desk. Their direct manager said, you should just pack up your things and go home. And I tell people, that's what happened in the zero-sum workplace, right? We had town hall meetings. We gave information. We didn't expect people to question us. And certainly you don't question the CEO publicly. And you just put your head down and you accept. That no longer works. That's faux engagement. It's performative. You know, as leaders, if we're going to engage people, we have to be prepared to hear hard truths, sit with them. You have to, you know, make sure that you know that you can handle it, right? Because when you react poorly like Jamie did, and again, he apologized, but that takes engagement down. Who's going to be the next person that will stand up and ask another question?
Yeah.
Most people in the room will think twice before doing that because they saw what happened very publicly to this individual.
Oh my gosh. Dr. Angela, it's so, you know, we use improv around here, and that is not yes and, okay? That is a no because, okay? And that is a no, that is a shutdown. There's nowhere to go from there. I truly, I think about just from every seat, right? I'm sure Jamie was feeling just blindsided by the conversation and just fell into the ego trap, right? And then
or just having a bad day. We have bad days, but also knowing what are the ripple effects of that, right?
Yes.
What are you saying without saying it? And when it comes to engagement, we're earning in every day that trust when people are giving us their opinions and telling their truths. We don't want to shut that down, especially in this moment, in this context in the world, right? We need more information to flow.
That is 1,000%. And I am there for that, 1,000%. So, okay, if I am a listener listening today, and let's say I maybe have one direct report, I don't sit in leadership, but I would love to talk to my leadership about changing the culture or changing the way that we engage our people. Is there something you could tell me to do, to say to my leader, to say to leadership, to start the conversation?
Well, the big one, and we talk about this in the book, and some of the great workplaces and leaders who have been able to affect change, they've really led with data. And I'll give you an example. Just like you said, there's one member who has maybe one direct report. You know, starting that process with your direct report and doing it over 30 days, 60 days, and seeing what that change looks like in that team.
Yeah.
And seeing if there is a change, and what are the three metrics by which you're going to know things are changing. So we already talked about the three questions that we're going to check in and ask. The other thing is, how do you know where a baseline is? And so every week, is someone coming and telling you that there's another barrier? Are they saying things are smooth? When they tell you what some of the barriers are, there themes around that barriers? Is it a certain office? Is it a certain task? Because all of that's going to give you information to collect. So then when you go to leadership, you can introduce this practice, why you did it, and what you've been able to collect and what you've been able to do. And so that's taking a very informed decision. And the thing about the barriers when you're asking people, there might be patterns that, again, in the day of managing or doing our jobs, we may not see, that leadership may not see. And so if you can bring to bear some patterns through this process that you can help management maybe see around the corner or see an opportunity that might actually arise, that's the best way that we've seen these practices really introduced, like bringing the idea, but also bringing the data that you've actually piloted and tried it.
I love it. And it's great. You can do it with one person and then do one to many, like you said. I love that. Okay, so let's flip the script. I'm a people leader. I'm listening. I'm a CHRO. I've got like 1,000 employees that are under my, you know, under my wing, and our engagement is low. What is one thing I could do today to just flip the script? Is it a survey? Is it a conversation? What can I, CHRO Aaron, do?
So the first is, we've got low engagement. We need to understand why. And so, you know, the survey is great and it gives us a baseline. And what we saw some of the best companies do, and I write about this in the book, once they got the baseline, they begin to pulse, and they would pulse different departments. They would pulse, you know, percentages of the team, so that over a year that they pulsed everybody, and people are getting pulsed on a monthly basis, sometimes more, but just sections. What they've been able to do with that data, and now that we have agentic AI and more of our companies are opening up their sandboxes for us, we can actually begin to process this data in real time. And the best companies are taking the data, that listening that they've heard, they're taking it and actually operationalizing it by saying, is this isolated to one supervisor? Is this isolated to one team? Is this isolated to one, you know, area of a work focus? And really getting clear on what those barriers are, and then start earning in by seeing how you can like remove and talk about like what is the core of the angst? What is the core of the low engagement? And you can actually devise a plan based on that. And then the pulsing is making sure that on a monthly basis, we're checking in. How are we doing?
Yeah.
Is it working? Do we need to tweak? Checking in. And we're seeing that it's this commitment to, like I mentioned before, continuous improvement, and seeing that data and leading with that to really kind of think about how you're going to create your strategy and drive your strategy.
Oh my God, I love it. I think so many listeners listening right now, this is a productive conversation because it lit a little fire under my tush to just get out there and just, even with my own team. And I have, you know, I have a small internal team, but a team of contractors, of 1099 facilitators. So can we talk about that before we go? What would you say to somebody who We've got our W-2 employees, and then we've got our contract team who does a lot of the work too. What is there any type of engagement plan you would do differently for a contract team?
So for small and mid-sized businesses, these practices are really crucial. And sometimes we try to treat our contractors differently. But if we think about small and medium-sized businesses, those contractors have an outsized impact on whether you're successful. Are they feeling like it's just contractual? Are they feeling like it's a team? Are they earned in? We all know the difference between contractors who are really like part and parcel with our team versus those who are just kind of clocking hours. We want to move our consultants so they're more, right, integrated into what we're doing. And so some of the best small businesses are actually bringing them in and learning from them too, right? So pulsing and surveying them, seeing what they're seeing. I'll give you an example. We had a consultant working with a medium-sized business. And as they were thinking about, they were just brought in to codify some of their products around HR products they're going to deliver. But by surveying them and surveying how they were working with people, they were actually able to surface some barriers that the manager didn't even know exist in terms of processes that for whatever reason, employees hadn't mentioned, right? But the contractor said, based on what I've seen with other companies, this is a way that you could do XYZ better. Not in my purview, but this is just kind of what I've seen anecdotally. So it matters if you can get them to do that. And again, you're engaging them by bringing them into the work and basically signaling to them that, you know, they're integrated,
yes,
you know, that they're part and parcel with your success.
Okay. All right. Change of the game all over the place. I love it, Dr. Angela. You are literally incredible. So tell everybody's going to be like, where can I get the book? Where can I find you? Tell them all the places.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things. One, they can go to the site, thewinwinworkplace.com. And so they'll be able to get the book. There's also case studies on there. And there's a site where if you actually want the discussion guide, some of the templates to do the talking, if you email, we'll send you all of that free of charge. The one thing that we ask is that hopefully when your listeners are using this, that you give us feedback because we're also committed to that continuous learning. So finding me on, you know, you can go to readwinwinworkplace.com. Also, you can find me on LinkedIn. I love talking to the community there. So if you have any questions or follow up, we can put the link there.
I love it. And you are just such a light. You're crushing it everywhere. And people are going to want to follow you, buy the book. I have one last question. And this is what I ask all of our guests. Okay, this is Workday Playdate. How are you at Chief today going to make your workday more playful?
So the biggest thing, and I love this when I'm in a new city, you know, this Women's Network Chief, they have a clubhouse here. It gives me an opportunity to actually stretch and talk to people I don't know. And so what I do is I like sit in the middle and, you know, I'm at the coffee machine and I'm making new friends because one thing I found about this particular group of women, they're all leaders. They're all leading people. And so really getting my finger on the pulse of like, as management, as leaders, you know, what are the political headwinds? What are people thinking about? What's top of mind really energizes my own work. And I find new case studies and stories to tell.
Love it. ABR, always be researching, you know?
Always be researching.
Always be researching. Okay. Okay. Well, I'm so excited for you. I'm so excited to stay connected with you. Peeps, you know what to do. Find her, buy the book, all the things. But thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me on Workday Playdate. This is the best. We all need playdates.
We do. Thanks for playing.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, peeps. Dr. Angela just gave us a masterclass. So here's your homework. No gimmicks, just truth. This week's homework, number one, I want you to write down one thing that drains your energy at work and one thing that gives you energy. One thing that drains you, one thing that gives you energy. And number two, step two, you're going to schedule one conversation with your manager, with a mentor or a teammate to talk about how you want to grow and what you need to do to stay engaged. We're talking about your own employee engagement plan. Step three, you're going to share this episode with somebody who's stuck in career autopilot. Let's help each other reclaim ownership one play date at a time, shall we? Now, once you do this with yourself, you can take these three steps and you can do it with your team. I actually do an exercise like this with our team at the beginning of every year. So at the end of the year, we do a CEO day. and we come up with three things: what we want to stop doing, what we want to start doing, and then what we're kind of okay doing. And so these three things really allow us to see where we shine, where we can scale back, or where we can give the work to somebody else. So I want you to remember, it's not about doing more. It's about doing what matters. It's about listening to your own engagement and the people around you. Know that we see you, we believe in you, and I will see you next week on Workday Playdate. And remember, every single day is a workday, and every workday is a playdate waiting to happen. Wait, hold on. I said that wrong, y'all. Every workday is a playdate waiting to happen. That's it. No mistakes, only gifts. All right, I'll see you next time.